Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Leo in London.
I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we get to know one another and experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. Here, we'll let people know that autistic therapists exist, to contribute to the evolving neurodiversity dialogue, and with each other to create an engaging and dynamic space. Everyone's welcome. You don't need to be autistic or to be a therapist to join us. We're sure you'll find something of interest and connection here.
So, it's the week before Christmas, and we have managed to completely avoid talking about Christmas up until now.
Yes.
So, I guess we probably should start there and see where it goes.
And whatever this is will come out pretty much Christmas weekend, I'm guessing.
I think so. If it doesn't come out this weekend, it might be lots of weeks away. Let's try and put it out this week.
Yeah, definitely. So we're talking about it because it's a major universal break in this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's got nothing to do really with the religious significance of the occasion. That'll come into it maybe. But the reason it's a thing is because we're in the Western world, which has that this is the main holiday that everybody takes at the same time when they can. And we are. And this is what I didn't know, you see. And I was asking you about recently off pod. And we thought we'd actually talk about it here today.
I mean, part of that was probably avoidance on my part, because I was like, oh, please, no, I don't want to think about that just yet. And it was only a few days ago that you asked me that.
Yeah, but I
guess I was probably trying to put it into a box so that, like, it could just be talked about now, because, like, it kind of would be weird for us not to talk about Christmas at some point. But it's not something that I like talking about. So I would naturally want to push it away. But I guess I want to go back to what you just said there, just to clarify, because I think you were talking to the listeners and kind of saying, like, not for any religious reasons. And, like, I guess what you're saying is that for us, we're not taking the holiday for religious reasons. But some people obviously are.
Well, I was thinking of the opposite of that, which is the people who is not of significance to religiously, but they're still obviously in that holiday period that everyone else is in because of where we live.
Okay.
So it's really about being inclusive rather than exclusive and saying not to talk. I'm not saying not to talk about any religious aspects of it, because they're hugely relevant to a lot of people in positive and negative ways, but also just to recognize that most people in the world for whom this is a holiday, it's not necessarily going to have religious significance for them. I was thinking that normally we talk about our kind of universal experience of just being who we are in the world. But in this context, I think there are specific connotations for Christmas, of Christmas for our neurotype and for our profession. And they're kind of separate in a way.
Have you been thinking about this in advance?
No. I mean, yes, lots of prep.
Okay. And then I'll give you that. I'll give you that. That sounds good. Okay.
And then there's you and there's me, and those will be different connotations too. So there are kind of four strands to this, really.
Okay, you're giving me structure.
Yeah,
I'm giving you.
No, what I'm doing.
Structure.
I'm giving us, not you, actually. Me, I need it really. It's scaffolding, just to hold things in place, and then we're free to kind of, obviously, as always, to leap off and say other things.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's probably useful, because I could probably actually just spiral off into any one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even just bringing up the religious aspect all the things that brings up for me because of my past, which maybe it is relevant from an autistic point of view, because I think that as autistic people, we can get really into things. And, you know, if you're influenced by something that, for me, like religion, which was toxic, then you can get really trapped in it and really into it and really lost in it. Whereas maybe if I wasn't autistic, then I could have sort of had a bit of space and a bit of perspective, because I can't do anything by halves. So, I mean, I guess we might do an episode at some stage on religion and autism is a thing, and getting out of religion whenever you're autistic is a big, big, big thing.
Which has significance for you.
Which has significance for me, yes. But I guess I want to name that, because that probably came up. That's probably why I wanted to correct you whenever I wanted to say, well, what are you saying about religion, to see if I could buy into what you said. So there's probably just a part of me that's going, oh, okay, trigger word, you know, make sure that. So I just needed to say that. I'm not gonna go off into religion or religious trauma, more specifically. I'm gonna leave that for today.
Yeah, yes. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Keep it festive. Okay.
I don't like the festive period. I don't like any of those words. I don't like the whole bloody thing.
It was your idea to do a Christmas episode. Maybe this is really badly thought out.
Well, no, I said we could talk about Christmas. I didn't say a Christmas episode, like meaning that it would be festive and happy.
No.
But it's probably going to do a real Christmas like chat, which is what we're doing now. Because it's noticeable that we haven't talked about it. We haven't even mentioned it between us, let alone on the podcast. And it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't escape it. It's everywhere. It always is. So there's been something there. Okay, I'm going to turn the focus on to you for a bit, because as you can see, I'm spinning in my chair, not very comfortable.
Sitting right back as well, as far from me as you can get digitally.
So, yeah, you can provide the visuals to the listeners. I am sitting back in my chair. I have my legs tightly crossed. I am swaying from side to side. I've got my hands above my head, tightly clasped.
And what does what are you embodying there?
Like some kind of apprehension or protection. No, not protection, but maybe protection. Maybe just like, you know, communicating, okay, this is hard, I'm not leaning in, I'm not smiling.
Like the only thing that's counterintuitive about that, I guess, to look at you now, is that because you have your hands behind your head, your body is actually very open. It's not an arms folded kind of cliche.
No, that's why I didn't say. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's yeah. But my hands are clasped,
yes,
like that.
Yes, yes.
You know, like I'm just aware, and like there's something in me. Okay, so if I like really lean into what I'm doing, there's some kind of like reaching up and moving, and like, you know, some kind of need for expansion, and but in a like get me out of. Like, I don't want to be sucked into a hole or something. It's really, really visceral, like, you know, because you know I don't always do this on the camera. I mean, I do sometimes. I move sometimes, of course. I mean, I'm autistic, you know, but I just really noticed that. So there's somatic stuff that comes up, which expresses some of this, and I'm interested in that, and that's why I'm naming that, you know. I'm not like, you know, I want to see where this goes, but I stand by my request that we turn back to you.
So what are you asking? What's the angle? What do you want me to do with this?
I just want you to speak about what Christmas brings up for you.
I really don't know how to. I think I need more of a guide there. I don't know why, but that's
okay. So Yeah, no, okay. So things are winding down for a holiday period. And
oh, do you mean professionally, kind of in my...
No, I didn't. I was just trying to set the scene because asked me to set the scene. No, I was like, when things are winding down, there's these kind of messages that people are going off to do their thing, do their Christmas thing. And, you know, I don't know if you have plans or you have rituals that you normally do.
Okay, that's
or what it brings up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's as a lot of people would say, and I know that this is difficult for lots and lots of people, but it's a family gathering time for immediate family. And there I'm talking about me and my wife and my mum and my dad and my sister and her daughter, my niece. It would have been in previous years before the people in my generation and the family, cousins, and before they had kids, it would, and my grandparents were around, it'd be a bit of a bigger thing. There's no, I had no religious upbringing to speak of. Culturally, I did. And that's kind of split between my mum and dad's sides of the family. And so it was my dad's side of the family that would be the more Christmassy side. Yeah. So as kids, we would go to my paternal grandparents, my aunt and uncle and their three kids, my cousins would be there on Christmas Day. But usually that would be after a visit to my mum's mum, whose birthday was on Christmas Day.
Oh, wow.
So I may have mentioned before that everybody in my mum's family, except for my mum herself, all their birthdays are in December, every single one of them. And so it was a busy time birthdays wise, but the Christmas kind of celebration that felt traditional was with my paternal grandparents, Betty and Ted. I'll name check them. And then since it's obviously, as it does with a lot of families, as the generation, the child generation grows up and then they start having kids, then it starts to fragment because you've got these individual family units. And that's also happened. So that's why it will be, for the last many years at mum and dad's. And occasionally we've swapped that about with Rachel's family. Her brother and his family live in Cardiff, and we've mentioned them on this show before. We've spent Christmas with them a few times. This year it's at mum and dad's, except that mum and dad both just tested positive for COVID a couple of days ago. So that's slightly in jeopardy now. It depends whether we get some negative tests before Christmas, but it's half a week away now. So who knows? We will see about that. We don't have a plan B necessarily. But, you know, it was like lockdown. It was no tough thing for me to be locked down and denied social contact because I don't have that much of it in the normal run of things. I mean,
I know. It's choice.
I am not a hectically social person. Yeah. When I was single, I was. And I realise now, you know, that was all about distraction. But that's not the case now, so it's not a huge deal, but obviously it would be. And we've had practice 2 years in a row of not having Christmas during lockdown as well, so that's the personal side of it. It will be fine to have those couple of days. If it turns out that way, they need to be quiet.
Yeah,
that's not a problem. It won't be heartbreaking. It'll be sad, but it will be okay.
Okay, so it will be sad. It'll bring up that. So is there something in you that is like looking forward to it?
To which? The plan A?
Yeah, to plan A.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
See, I don't know what that's like.
Yeah.
I don't look forward to Christmas.
Again, there's something that's novel about that, even given that I'm in my 50s and my parents are in their 70s. There is actually novelty around that because my parents moved house 3 years ago.
Okay.
And so what we were incredibly used to, which was the house that I grew up in, is now new and different. And so it's actually, novelty in there as well of spending a day together there, celebrating a thing and in a place that's still kind of new to us.
Yeah. And does everybody go back into roles like whenever you're all together? Like I just I don't know, like does that not happen, and is that not weird, or is that not, does that not cause any anxiety, or is it all just good and you just had these wonderful relationships?
Like all things that I now understand about my autistic social self is that these things do need to be contained, and I do need to know what the beginning, middle and end is going to be in terms of time, apart from time and energy. Mm-hmm. And that is the case on Christmas Day. You know, it's different when, as many people that I work with and that I know personally, travel to another part of the country or the world to be with family, and that is a little bit more indefinite and less contained because they stay there, or and that can bring up, you know, really great difficulties. I don't face that because I don't stay with anybody on with, and I don't not get on with anybody particularly. You know, that doesn't come up.
And they live close by, so
and
you
they're close
come
by.
Home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would see them most weeks. Yeah.
Oh, that's just so functional, Leo.
Yes, isn't it just so healthy? What do you want to say about your experience or plans even for Christmas? Because we talked a little bit about this in the last few days. What you've told me, and then you can tell me if that's something you want to expand on, is that you avoid a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
You and your daughter.
Well, okay. So I used to absolutely detest it, like be apprehensive and fearful for ages in advance of it, because the thought of it would just overwhelm me. Like taking it in chunks and step by step would have like got me through it, but the anticipation of it used to practically finish me off. And that was because there was so many expectations, because I had a big family and my husband had a big family, and you know, there was just so many people and so many gatherings, and there hadn't been any negotiation around withdrawing. It took lots and lots of years for us to withdraw from things that we couldn't do. And well, mostly I couldn't do, to be fair. He wouldn't have stressed half as much as I would have stressed. And then our daughter came along, and she really struggled. So that actually made it easier, because there was two of us that couldn't cope with it. But like even like, I guess it was maybe always there, but from like my teens, late teens, I was really able to mid-late teens, I was able to put it into words, and really, really detested it, really, really dreaded it. And at that time, I didn't have very much autonomy. I was just taken to the things that the family, you know, was going to. And it was excruciating for all of the autistic reasons that I didn't know were because I was autistic, but it was just it was too many people. It was far too hot. People were asking me direct questions. They hadn't seen me for a long time. They wanted to give me, they wanted me to give them answers, and answers that they liked. You know, like I just couldn't do it. It just felt, it was absolutely intolerable, excruciating. When I started to get a little bit more autonomy, then I would sort of, even as a young person, I was able to opt out of some of it. But I opted out, but I still had to do a good enough number of it for it to scare me and make me apprehensive. Yeah. Whenever I was a bit older and had even more autonomy, it was also really awkward because I was living away from home and I had friends who I was very close to, but they went home for Christmas. And so I would have gone home at some point, even though that mightn't have been my preference, because I want to be on my own in a student house, like that, just no. So, and plus some of my friends, I was in university in Belfast, and some of my friends, the close ones that I lived with, were actually from England. So they were away for like a good period of time, you know. So that was long to fill. And those years, I really dreaded them. Like I actually had a friend who lives locally, and her parents own a taxi firm, and nobody wanted to work the shifts of answering the phone. So me and her would do that. we would do the taxis and get paid, obviously, but it was something to do.
Yes.
And it gave me an excuse that I didn't have to do things because I was working. But things like that allowed me to put some structure and put some space and just have a task to do, a busy task to do. So I remember that, and I, you know, if anything was happening, like if any of my friends or when I had a boyfriend, different Christmases, if like there was some way in which I could go to something, then I would take all of those opportunities because they were less difficult because nobody would ask me so many questions because there wasn't that expectation that I would have to speak for myself. There was just, there was always just something about you have to speak for yourself. You have to account for yourself. What are you doing? How are you living your life? And it just doesn't work whenever you're autistic. And it just, yeah, there was just too many people and it was too hot and I didn't like the food and everything about it and everybody being dressed up and everybody doing all the hilarity. Like it just freaked me out. It just felt so artificial and so like, and I, like even things like you haven't seen all these people for so long and then you're supposed to get together and laugh and giggle and joke. And like I used to watch the Grown Ups and I used to be like, are you for real? You know, like I just didn't get it.
Because this starts to address the small talk thing, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's kind of, what's the point of this if we're not going to say meaningful things?
Yes. Totally. And then the, like, no, I wasn't very often in a workplace that had Christmas, like Christmas dinners, but I was some years. And then other times it would just be colleagues who would want to do things. And I would do anything to get out of those kind
Me
of
too.
Things.
Yes.
So it's just too busy and too all of that stuff. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you asked me what Christmas is like and I've just gone back 20 years. But the history of it is that, you know, it went from that to gradually opting out as the years went on. Now, we pretty much don't do anything apart from like my mum will visit for a few hours on Christmas Day. But apart from that, we don't do any gatherings.
And this is now at a point, presumably, where this is all through choice.
All through choice, yes. We could go to things. Yeah. If I wanted to get invitations, I could get invitations, you know. But over the years, because of declining so many times, we're at that stage where no one will say we're having this. Like my, so I'm still very close to my daughter's dad, although we're separated, we don't live together. So we'll be together. He spends Christmas with me and my daughter, his daughter as well. So we will be together and they, like, you know, there's no problem in terms of us being at something together. There's no awkwardness.
No.
If we were the type of people who had always gone to the gatherings, I think they would still expect that I could come with him and there wouldn't be any awkwardness. But we've opted out so much over the years that you know, that doesn't happen. My brothers are in England and don't come home for Christmas. It'll be really, really quiet and we'll just do whatever we want and we'll play and we'll just do the days. And so like it doesn't sound horrible. It's not horrible. It's really nice. It's not horrible.
No, it doesn't sound it.
It brings connotations for me that there's this massive tension and this avoidance that can't look forward to it. But when it comes, it'll be nice. You know, it will be nice because it's easy for the three of us to be together. And, you know, and we do have fun and we do puzzles and we play games and we watch TV and we eat whatever we want and all of that kind of stuff. So it will be nice, but I can't access a looking forward to because of this avoidance of the idea of Christmas. It's just not there yet. Maybe at the weekend. There'll certainly not be a dread, but, you know, when there might be a, oh, we're going to get time and, you know, all of that, that might come in, but it's not in yet. It's not a looking forward just yet, probably because of the history and the past. Just haven't got past that yet.
Of course.
Because it's traumatic. Like, I listen to myself talk about that and I go, oh, yeah, that was traumatic. That was really, really, really hard. And so whenever you come round to a season again that has been difficult for you and you get reminders of at times that were hard, then, you know, that's going to bring up and activate all of those emotions, even though it's not happening right now and right this year.
Yeah. Yes. Because it is it's this predictable, regular throwback to experiences. And the thing is with Christmas, it's going to do that for you if it is religious trauma that you've experienced, but it'll also do it to you anyway if it's just but if it's family trauma, if it's, you know, because of that's the moment that everybody's making that connection and contact.
And even when you say that, I'm like kind of going, oh, it doesn't even feel right that it's family trauma. And that's just not me trying to sugarcoat it and like not say anything bad about anybody. I don't mean to do that. It's autistic trauma. You know, it's due to, it would have happened no matter what family I was in, unless I'd had a particularly autistic and aware and mindfully autistic family. It wasn't that anything was actively done bad to me at Christmas. Like, I was treated well. Everybody tried to be nice to me. You know, I was welcomed, you know, included. People would have tried to talk to me. You know, I would have come across as shy and quiet, and they were all doing their very, very best to include me when I just wanted to disappear and melt into the floor, you know. So it's not memories of family trauma so much as of autistic trauma, like what it's like to be an autistic person
in that immersion of all of that unusual
sensory and yes. and nonsensical hilarity. I'm all for liking things and joy, but it just felt like, what? Why are you saying that? It's so excessive. You know, because people need to laugh and get on, and I don't know how to do that.
Some of that resonates. I think I probably got quite good at performative socialization. I don't think I would have looked quite shy or whatever. I'd been able to generate that excitement. All the ADHD part of me would have been able to take over at that point.
Okay.
Get stimulated. But certainly when you talked about briefly the idea of work-related celebrations, that really threw up stuff, because for several years I was, you know, working in the corporate world, and in a few occasions, like incredibly high-end, posh, swanky Christmas ball. Awful. Just awful. I mean, not even comically awful, just genuinely so gut-wrenchingly, I just want to get out. When can I get out?
There was
one that you just made me think of, which was where it ended, whatever the do was, happened, and then a few people, including me, which would have been the team that I worked with. I was a graphic designer at the time, so I was working in like communications bit of the company. And these were people I liked quite a lot. A couple of them, you know, good friends afterwards. But they all decided they wanted to go on somewhere. And I was expected to tag along. And I just remember this moment somewhere in the West End, late at night. They all, maybe there was four of them and me, so, you know, five off somewhere. So hailed a cab. Everybody got in. And then I just said, I don't want to go, bye. And I slammed the door and legged it basically in the opposite direction. Because I just suddenly, it was almost panic.
It wasn't almost panic.
It absolutely was panic. I just thought, I can't stay in this situation of kind of enforced jollity. I just felt so out of place. And now I know why, but I didn't. I just knew I needed to get away. And I knew I wouldn't see them till for a couple of weeks, because then it was, you know, we're on break. It was kind of safe. Oh, dear.
And that can bring so much shame, though. Like, if I do something like that, then I am flooded with embarrassment that I've, like, done that I've needed to run away. Like, it's like, you know, sometimes it's necessary, like whenever I've been in social occasions and it all gets too much, mm-hmm. like a quick exit is the only way to avoid meltdown.
Exactly.
So you have to, but then I get ashamed afterwards because it's like you can't just go to someone and explain. Well, I couldn't then, maybe I could now.
Yeah, me too, exactly.
I wouldn't put myself in the situation now, but like whenever it gets to that stage that you just have to get out, it's at crisis point. But sometimes you might know it's mounting, but you don't really know how to deal with it. It just you get into overwhelm, and that was it.
There was the opportunity in literally a split second to cut social contact and end it for a week or two even. In that split second, I didn't have to say I don't, because I had tried earlier. Now I think about it, saying, "Oh, I'm kind of tired. I'm maybe not up for this." But you know, then comes the drunken Christmas peer pressure of you're coming with us.
Yes.
So that was kind of neat. I literally got to close the door on it, and there was nothing that could be done because the taxi drove away. But this is now triggering all kinds of similar memories of exactly the same kinds of situations
too.
Just legged it with no warning somewhere in public.
Because
it's just not my thing.
Or like, so what I would have done when I was still with Ricky was like, I would have you know, we'd have talked about it and he'd have said to me, but Shauna, when you get out, you actually do like it, you know.
That's familiar.
No, but it's true. It's actually true.
Okay.
But then there would be a point when it would be too much. So we would have a deal where I would go somewhere and there wouldn't be like a set going home time. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't say you need to pick me up at 10 because I'll have had a couple of hours and that'll be enough. I didn't know how to say that. I would know that I could get picked up at short notice when I needed to. And he would check in, like I'm remembering one time, he would check in and go, are you sure you're okay? Can you, do you know, because it had been a bit longer and he was going like, am I just going into like thinking I'm okay and then I'm not? And then he'll get a phone call where I'll be like hiding in the toilets going, I need you to come now. But I never knew in advance, like when that point would go. And I think that's why then I avoided going altogether. Because like if I go for a set amount of time that I'm actually enjoying, then I can come home. Now I'll be up all night because I'll be overstimulated, but I can still say like, yeah, that was nice. And it didn't get too much and it was worth doing. But if I get past the point of no return, then it's going to spoil the whole night, you know, so I'm going to end up in tears and I'm going to regret it and I'm going to feel stupid. And then I'm going to say, I don't want to go the next time. So that we had to have this thing where, like, if I didn't feel it creeping up on me, then he would do the checks and check, was it creeping up on me? And I don't think I ever really nailed it. And I don't think there was ever like an exact amount of time that I could always say. That's why we couldn't do a pre-plan, me up at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or something. It would all depend on so many things. And when I would be in there, although I might actually be happy and be with people that I felt safe and okay with, I would be holding myself together and not noticing it. So I wouldn't be very able to pay attention to how I'm actually feeling and am I actually okay? And that's why then it would kind of creep up and I would end up then, I go to the toilets and then I go, I'm really not okay, really not okay, really not okay. But I wouldn't have known that was coming. I'd have to actually remove myself, you know. So that might have been a strategy that I didn't know how to do then. But I sort of do know now, like sometimes I will take myself off to check in with myself because I can't necessarily do it in the moment with like crowds of people around me. I'll just not be able to know how I'm feeling. All I know is I'm surviving, and but I could be getting dangerously high, high in an emotional way, not in a substance way, and just not know about it because I lose touch with my own experiencing whenever I'm sensory overstimulated. There. There's another story.
And it's such a concentrated time because if you are a regular, I don't know what regular is, but an averagely sociable person in the world, then certainly it's dialed up over Christmas and New Year, but it's just dialed up. But I think for us, it's kind of, there's a bit more of a switch that we then, so it takes so much more awareness and deliberate handling, because this is suddenly a time when there are expectations that aren't there the rest of the year.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily the most comfortable.
Yes, I would. Yes, I would never have gone out with those people for casual drinks during the year, like they might have done for each other. But then I might kind of just join them at Christmas, or they might want me to join them at Christmas, like work people that I was actually quite close to.
Yes.
And I think that that's the same, like even now, you know, my friends, my close friends, like they might do those kind of social things with other friends, but they know I don't enjoy them. So like we see each other in each other's homes or in a cafe or go for a walk. And, you know, but then, like if they were ever to suggest, oh, like we never go out in the evening to a bar or something like that. And if they were to say, like, let's do that for a special thing at Christmas, that would be really, really hard for me as well. Like they don't. They don't now, because I guess they know, and maybe it doesn't even come into their mind. But I feel like that's really, really hard for a lot of people to understand. Like, why wouldn't you if you're close and, you know, like you care about each other, it's nice and safe and secure, like we're not intending to go out and like party all night and you know, join with anybody else, like it's just maybe two people. But as an autistic person, sometimes I feel like that sort of hope maybe to other people would feel like it is really hard to understand, like it just, like, why would you not want to do that even at Christmas?
Yes, especially like at Christmas, yes.
Just ever. Yes. Like, why would you not want to do that? Or I've had people say on my birthday, like, can I not just take you out to such and such, you know? And I just don't want to do it, you know?
When I had a round number birthday a little while ago, Rachel basically had to stand guard against a number of people in my life who were absolutely determined to arrange a big celebration. At first, a surprise, worst possible scenario. But even anything that was beyond a certain size and you know, she had to, on my behalf, be really, really firm. And it was met with, this does not make sense.
Yeah.
Or maybe even without saying it, you know, are you trying to ruin his birthday by denying him? You know what I mean? I'm making that up. I don't, nobody said that, but I can imagine might have felt that way. I hadn't even thought of that until now, but it was just such a, I had to say, please, nothing. We're going to have my family here. We're going to have dinner together. That's lovely. That's just what I want. Somebody in my life who was really trying to take charge of this was trying to hire a boat. You know, a boat party, that, fuck off, because there's so many horror layers to that. First of all, it's just, I'm not great about boats, but a riverboat's fine, I guess. But
yeah,
I can't get off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You're there till you're there.
Yes. And,
oh, nightmare. But that doesn't make sense to most people. Most people would look at that and either think you'd love it, give it a go.
Yeah.
And that's a very familiar phrase. You love this kind of thing. Come on. Or it's, look at him. He's so up himself. He thinks he's so, he's all that he can't, you know, he's so sensitive. But now we've got the language. Now we know the words that people are going to struggle with less, or they're going to fight us over it.
Yes. Or we might be able to deal with the criticisms by going, okay, I get that perspective, and validate ourselves or validate each other.
So we're talking in the middle of the week, leading up to Christmas 2023, and I am still working. I will work up until this Friday. I'll finish during the day on Friday, and because the usual pattern is Christmas week and New Year's week off, and it so happens that both But Christmas Day is a Monday this week, so it's kind of neat. You know, you get to go right to the end of the week, and that suits me fine. And then, so I will be off work for 2 weeks, so no sessions.
Interesting.
And I'm coming to you. and that is fine. I try to do, every time I'm going to have any kind of break, my kind of policy is that I give 4 weeks' notice. Mm-hmm. But recently, and we've talked about this before and earlier in the last few weeks, I've been unwell, I had pneumonia, and so I've been kind of on and off work. And a lot of people that I work with have been having to put up with cancellations and reschedules, usually at the very last minute. Mm-hmm. And so there is part of me that thinks it's not a good time for me. I feel bad that I'm also suddenly, after a lot of inconsistency and disruption in the last month, and not 2 months, to then kind of be solidly off for 2 weeks. But I also know, though, that is my chance to properly recover.
Yes. And yes.
So, and you know, I have the most wonderful practice of people who are incredibly compassionate and understanding and have not given me any jip for yeah. And of course, there's something actually allied to this, and it's not the same point, but there's something that we vaguely talked about before, but I want to say it again because we didn't put out an episode out last week. Mm-hmm. Because there's this thing again also about consistency and inconsistency and energy levels and all that kind of thing when it comes to being autistic. And I know that we've said this before and it's in the blurb probably somewhere, but we do our best. This is the aim, is to speak to you all every week, but sometimes there'll be a gap, and that's because this is two autistic people running a schedule and a side schedule at that, when we're busy doing other things too. Is it okay to say that, do you think?
It's fine to say that. Yeah, it's fine to say that. And I'm glad that you are taking the 2 weeks off, because actually you cut out from other episodes the bits where we were talking about your health. So our listeners do not actually know that you've been unwell. This is the first that they're hearing about that. And I don't think it's a bad thing that they do hear about it.
Neither do I.
I respected, obviously, I didn't question you, that you took it out, but I did notice that you took it out. So
I thought we'd left something in when you said something like, because you've been unwell for the last 2 weeks or something. But the thing is, I need to give you props for this. You spotted it right at the beginning, the week before,
that you weren't well.
And you were basically saying, no, this is, you need to take this a bit more seriously. And I did not.
Well, it took 2 weeks to get that through to you. But yes, I did tell you the first time that you spoke on the day that you got it, I said, oh, you're not well. Mm. And you're like, no, I'm fine. Rachel's not well. And then, no, you're not well. But yeah, it did take you 2 weeks until you got antibiotics or longer. I think I told you had to go after 2 weeks, but you didn't even go after 2 weeks.
I will never ignore your advice again.
It's gone on for a long time and it's not been easy. And I am sure that your clients will totally understand and will know that you need to have 2 weeks off.
Sure. I don't know what you're doing yet. Or not.
In terms of my client, well, you do know that I finished. I finished with my people that I see yesterday, and I'll be off for the next 2 weeks and 2 days because, unlike you, I don't need it to be a Friday in any shape or form. And I can very easily stop on a Monday and go back on a Thursday, and there's no big deal. Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. We're very open to feedback and suggestions for future topics. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com or email autisticlicense@gmail.com. If you're interested in therapy with an autistic counsellor, you can visit thrivingautistic.org.